Okay, so be a bit more serious now. Learning how to meditate to make your mind nice and peaceful and happy, the body healthy, and everything tends to go really well. I have just come back from London, doing some teachings over there, and there's some really nice news over there, which shows you what meditation can do. Do you know Ajahn Bhamali, Rachel? No, his sister had really bad cancer.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so still young with two little kiddies. And so they've been following my meditation for the last couple of weeks and then did a little course in London. And then they went for a scan. She had 4 tumours before the meditation. 2 are now gone, and the other 2 are reduced by 80%.
Yeah.
Amazing. And because that's Ajahn Bhamali, you know him. He's one of my senior monks. It's amazing that that can actually happen. So that's wonderful to be part of that. This actually works. If you do this meditation problem, it has to be done compassionately and kindly. So don't be too forceful when you do meditation, because that just makes you more stressed. You're already stressed out enough. You don't want to come to a meditation more stressed. So meditation is like learning how to be kind, learning how to be still, learning how to be at peace with yourself and at peace with your body. All the years I've been a monk and teaching all over the world, you've seen amazing things happen when people just give your body a chance. When you're worried about stuff, it really makes it much, much worse. So the worries we have, sometimes about the future, sometimes about the past, we have to let them both go. I'm just remembering that twice a year I go to the Cancer Support Association, Cancer Wellness Association. They're over in Cottesloe. And your taxes went to build a huge complex over there and to have all of the basically cancer organizations all in one campus. And that was open, I think, last year, and I got the invite to open it together with the Premier. And when I was asked this, you know, quite prestigious invitation, I asked, why me? No Archbishop, no rabbis, no other people, just me and the Premier. And they said, because I've been going, they reminded me for about 27 years, without fail, you know, every year, you know, twice a year probably. And I said, well, why do you keep inviting me? And they said the very first time I went there, there was one cancer sufferer who, she was in remission. So, you know, the tumours, whatever, had gone. But she was so anxious about what would happen if the cancer comes back. Can you understand, those of you who've been through a cancer, you know, it's really unpleasant, you know, to put it mildly. And the fear, I don't want to go through this again. What would happen if it came back? What would happen if it came back? And no one was able to answer her. And then this young monk comes along for the first time and just answers her question and solves the problem. And I answered the question with a very simple story, because I like telling stories. And it was a story from an English philosopher. I don't know if you know philosophy or studied philosophy, but you maybe know this philosopher, because he was very, very famous. He even made a movie about him. I think a couple of movies, I think. His name was Winnie the Pooh. Now those are the philosophers I like, you know, ones you can understand. And anyway, the story was, Winnie the Pooh was walking with his best friend Piglet through the forest one evening when it was a huge storm, and little Piglet, being a small fellow, got more and more scared. And because there was lots to be scared about, there were big branches falling over and even big trees being uprooted, and this poor little Piglet got so scared he couldn't walk any further. He held on to his best friend Pig's, Winnie the Pooh's paw, and said, I can't go on any longer. I just can't. What would happen if a tree fell when we were underneath it? Which was a real possibility. In a storm, sometimes trees fall and you have to be underneath one. And that's it. You're dead. And for 1 second, maybe only half a second, the great philosopher W.T. Pooh was scared, but then his wisdom came in. And he said, yes, that's a possibility, but consider this. What would happen if a tree fell when we weren't underneath it? And that was all that was necessary to overcome the fear. Because the fear of the future is what would happen if, followed by something terrible happened. And it's always overcome by simply changing your perception of the future, what would happen if it didn't. When I told that story, this girl at the Cancer Support Association, she thought, oh, what am I worried about? I keep on thinking, what would happen if the cancer comes back? What would happen if it didn't? And it didn't. And she keeps coming back, though, every year for 26 years. Going back to see me. So, this is how we actually overcome the fear so we don't worry. All fear is what would happen if followed by something terrible. And the chances are, it's not going to be terrible. So, if you want to overcome fear, yeah, what would happen if, but then stop and put something positive in, instead of negative. And that means you can let go of the future. As for the past, it's already happened, so it cannot be undone. And anyway, you survived, you're here. And if you've been having a wonderful time in the past, wonderful. If you're having a terrible time, that's even more wonderful, because if you didn't have problems in your life, you wouldn't be here listening to me. So thank you for coming. So you always look, whatever happened in the past is always something wonderful you can make out of it. And now, of course, many of you have really been through terrible, terrible times. But the kindness and compassion actually allows that past to be dealt with properly. Don't try and get rid of stuff. Embrace it. There's a little story which is part of the meditation. This is not the after meditation talk, Rachel. It actually all ties in. That it's the story of the opening the door of your heart, which is one of the big stories in my first book, which is, was bestseller. That opening the door of your heart means that you allow whatever's happened in the past, or even what's happening now, allow it in. Be kind to it. Because anyone who's had a lot of trauma in the past, just say it in a little exercise you do. Imagine a little heart in your chest, a Valentine's Day heart, with two doors. Open those two doors and imagine a staircase coming down from your heart to the ground. Up the top there, inside your heart, is all those experiences of the past which you can deal with, which you like, or your happy memories, or those parts of you which you can respect and allow in. But unfortunately, each one of us has parts of us, parts of our past, which we reject, which we push outside because they're just too painful to deal with. And that's down the bottom. And that's a real problem. You haven't embraced the whole past. I know it's hard to do, but there comes a time when you invite all those little you, the little girl who was badly treated, was abused, the little man who was also beaten up, bashed, rejected, all those little yous are outside, on the ground. You know who they are. They're actually part of you. You can imagine this little girl, this little boy, whatever it was, or even a more mature man or mature woman out there. And you invite them up into your own heart. Come in. So you embrace your past. Totally. It's a very difficult, traumatic thing to do, but it's where one gets healing. That's who you are. You can't get rid of it. But you embrace it. Give it kindness. Give it respect. And then there's a huge catharsis, a huge change. It's no longer a problem anymore. And what it is the other simile which comes up with this one. Yeah, it is shit what happened to you. But when you know how to use shit, it makes the most delicious mangoes when you dig in. So that's actually how you dig these things in. So when you're meditating, you will find thoughts of the past, fears of the future coming up. And this is how you deal with those. You don't try and push them out, reject them. Please let them come in. Embrace them. Be kind to them. Because when you're kind to them, you're softening everything. You're taking away the stress in your mind. So when you're meditating, it's not trying to be still, trying to be enlightened, trying to be able to watch your breath or whatever. It's just trying to be whatever's happening and be kind to what's ever happening. Embrace what's ever happening. Don't try and push things away. Now, one of the troubles with when people try and meditate, some people, maybe I'm not sure you, they all want to get enlightened this evening, otherwise they want their money back. So don't try and get somewhere. Just be. So this is learning how to be in the present moment. No past, no future. Just whatever comes up from the past, let it come in. Whatever comes up from the future, let it come in. But just be kind to it, be positive to it. And then you find the past and the future become so soft, it's easy to let it go. I call it being kind to the past, being kind to the future. And then they just get so soft, they're not a problem anymore. So you can actually relax in the present moment. And when you're in this present moment, you know, it's not such a bad place after all. We're always trying to improve ourselves, but I really get very down on the self-improvement movement. I don't know why you want to improve yourself. Who says you're not good enough as you are? And this comes in here. Can't really avoid this story. If you want to know what I'm talking about, next time you're in a park or in a forest, go and find the perfect tree for me. And you'll find the perfect tree, the ones you really like, the beautiful ones, are not the straight ones. The crooked ones, bent all over the place, with branches hanging off, with all scars on the trunk, they're the most beautiful ones. The ones which have been damaged by life. They're the most beautiful trees. So if you are damaged goods, you belong. You're part of the forest. And in fact, the more damaged you are, often, you are the most beautiful tree in the forest. You belong. So check that out next time you're in a forest. And then you understand, you don't have to improve. Just embrace yourself as you are. You become at peace with yourself as you are. We don't try and change ourselves to try and make ourselves acceptable. We accept. And then we find we don't need to change. And that is a huge freedom which comes to the heart where meditation is. Letting things be. Enjoying yourself as you are. So when you're meditating, it's great, you don't have to change anything, achieve anything, or do anything. What was that story of the man who went to the bookshop? He went to the counter, he said, I'm looking for the self-help section. And the person on the counter said, well, sir, if I tell you where the self-help section is, it will be defeating the purpose. Find it out for yourself. Okay. I think I told that joke before. Last time it went down much better. But never mind. I just let it go. But this is learning how to be. Let it be. So if you're meditating here trying to get somewhere, you're going to get a lot of trouble. More stress. So here, this is who you are. Don't try and improve yourself. Just let yourself be. And that is the heart of this meditation. So you shut your eyes. Let your body be, first of all. Make sure that your body is relaxed. Yeah, it's got some aches and pains, but that's part of having a body. There's always some part of the body which is having problems. Me, I have hay fever. I don't know, you can have heart transplant, liver transplant. I'm waiting for someone to have nose transplants. If I have a nose transplant, I'll put my hand up, I want a nose transplant. This one sucks. Always blowing, just about to get enlightened and I blow it. That's another joke, okay. There we go. And anyway, but what I really want, if I can possibly, to have a black nose, an indigenous Aboriginal nose, just to show that my multiracial support. Would that be good? Have a Jewish nose? Have a, what other nose can I get? It would be really funny, wouldn't it? Have like a white face with a black nose in the middle. That would be really interesting.
Anyway.
Nose wardrobe. Yeah, that's right. Shave one every day, yeah. But anyway, whatever. So, so it's always something happening in your body. So what do you do with it? Trying to get rid of it, like I've been saying so far, just makes you more tense and irritation gets worse. So when I do this meditation, I'm going to lead this meditation in a few moments. I will find just let it be. Relax with it. Open the door of your heart to whatever ache or pain you have in your body. Don't fight it. Now this is going to be really helpful for you when you give birth. Never fight. Just totally let things be. Let all those incredible feelings just come into your body. And don't name them, for goodness sake. Don't say pain. The worst thing, when people say, this is going to hurt, this is going to hurt, this is going to hurt. You've had experiences like this. I remember when I was a young monk, stepping on a nail, the nail almost went straight through my foot. And it didn't hurt until the monk who was with me, stupid monk, said, oh, that looks terrible. As soon as I said that, it started to hurt. If they hadn't sort of said that, I'd probably been okay. So, remember, just whatever happens, just let it be. Just be in the present moment. No fear of the future, no memory of the past. And just be. And just, then you can actually totally relax. And many of those feelings in the body just, actually they vanish. When you really relax the body, there's no tightness and tensions, a lot of healing happens. That's how that lady overcame her most of her cancers. Another lady I love quoting from Poland, she overcame arthritis, chronic arthritis, didn't need to take any medication anymore, totally gone. It's incredible how powerful this can be. When you really relax and let go, healing can happen. Not always happens, but you're really increasing your chances. So you really relax the body. You can actually feel the body relaxing. That is called mindfulness of the body. You're aware of your own body sitting here. All the different feelings in it and learning how to actually control this body by just relaxing it. This is your own body, but sometimes we're so busy. No one's ever taught us how to be aware of your own body, just parts of your body, so that you can actually have some power over them to really relax them and even heal them. So that part of the meditation, wow, it's really powerful. And then your body gets so relaxed, you can sit here and you do exactly the same thing to your mind. This mind thing where all of the thoughts, the feelings, you know when people meditate, one of the most difficult things is to stop the thoughts. You don't stop the thoughts. If you try and stop the thoughts, you get more of them. So instead, actually, you go underneath the thoughts. You like the if the mind is like a lake, the thoughts are the waves on the surface of the lake. So it's not the waves' problem. It's underneath. There's too much agitation underneath. You're doing too much. You're trying too much. So instead, I'm going to teach in this meditation how to be aware of another part of your mind, which I call like the peace of mind stroke agitation index. How peaceful are you now? How agitated are you? And agitation means worry, fear. Peaceful means like relax, at ease. I'm going to ask you to give that a number from 1 to 10. Don't have to do it now. I'll ask this later on. And then once you give it a number, I'm really agitated, really upset, really sort of afraid. That's maybe 8 or a 9. If you really relax, that's maybe a 2 or 3. So when you actually can be mindful by giving it a number, then see what makes that number go up. Now it's more agitated. What makes it more relaxed? And you'll find the same thing which relaxes your body. Just letting it be. Open the door of your heart to whatever's happening. Just allowing things to be with kindness. That relaxes your mind. So you look at that first of all. Once your mind gets relaxed, you're hardly getting your thoughts in the mind. The mind is nice and still and peaceful. And then those of you who want to go deeper meditation, such as watching the breath and stuff, it's so easy to do. Once you've got your foundation of a mind pretty much at peace. In the old days, people didn't have to do very much. Not so many worries. Life wasn't so complicated. So it's very easy just to monks to go off and meditate, just watching the breath for hours, no problem at all. But these days it's so difficult to do because we've got so much stuff to get through just to survive one day. So because that, get these preparations done, really relaxed body, oh, just a really relaxed mind. And then everything gets just so nice. And when meditation does start to happen, wow, it's just so pleasant. You're enjoying yourself. Having a wonderful, peaceful time. Which is why, as Rachel said, I dubbed this group Club Med Armidale. Club Med, you have to pay a fortune to go to. The real Club Meds, you know, in the beaches, but they are so stressful. I know somebody went there, they told me what they had to do all day. It was just 9 till 10 tennis, 10 to 11 swimming, 11 to 12, and in the evening, just party until midnight. And just, they came back home afterwards exhausted doing all that stuff. But this is real Club Med, Club Meditation, where you really relax. You go home afterwards feeling just so, like $1 million. Just so peaceful, so relaxed. Walking on air. So much so that whatever happens when you get home, nothing can just upset you. You're just too relaxed. So that's what meditation should do. Okay? If you follow instructions. If you don't follow instructions, it's not my fault. Okay, so there we go. I hope that is clear enough. And anyway, I will give guidance throughout the whole half an hour so that we can meditate in peace, and my guidance will take me to beautiful peace and calm. Maybe. See what happens. Okay, so you've all been sitting down for half an hour or more. So now, follow instructions. Please get up and stretch. Very good. So it's nice to have a big stretch. Especially stretch your back here. All these endomorphins coming through the body. That feels good. Now, once you've stretched enough, you can go and sit down. I'll sit down over here, where I belong. Sometimes with the lights off, it's hard for me to see the clock. So if I go on till 9 o'clock or 9:30, it's not my fault. I just can't see the clock. No, I'm pretty good. It's like, yeah, tell the time. So, now you close your eyes. The reason why we close our eyes is so now you can pick your nose when no one's watching. Whatever else you want to scratch, because you wouldn't dare scratch when people are looking at you. So get your body comfortable just by adjusting it, moving it. Now a lot of times we think we are aware of the body, but one great technique to become aware of your body is ask it. Legs. Are you comfortable? Ask that question of your legs, and you get an answer. It's like arousing mindfulness. And if your legs tell you, no, I could be more comfortable, then for goodness sake, move. Adjust the legs. Now you've got to keep the body reasonably still for half an hour, so you better get it in a good position, otherwise you're going to suffer. And your butt, the bottom on top of the chair, on the cushion. If you've got fat butts, it doesn't really matter so much. You've got your own cushion. For those who are a bit thin, make sure you put something underneath. And if you like to just adjust the bottom until you get the best position, back. Sometimes people like to lean against the backrest of the chair, sometimes to lean up. Find out what is the best for you. Don't just assume. Try both. Leaning back, leaning forward. Which is the best? From there we come to our arms and our hands. Where do you need to put your arms or hands to make them comfortable? There is no magic posture. Even though you may read in books or see some teachers, I've got the cred of being an international teacher. I know that you can put your hands anywhere and still get some deep meditation. So just you find out for yourself where you need to put your hands and arms so they are comfortable. That's all you really need. loosen your shoulders. And then check your head. I like to finish off with the first part of body awareness by asking meditators, can you please check the muscles, especially around your eyes? Are they relaxed? See if you can relax them, like lessen the tightness and tension on the muscles. You can imagine the muscles like a rubber band being stretched on both ends. Let go. Loosen. You can do that. What's happening is you're mindful of the feelings around the eyes, and when you do let go, you get the feedback. The muscles are relaxing. So you can relax your facial muscles by being aware, just letting go, relaxing, being kind, embracing. And you get the feedback that relaxation is actually happening. Just look at your body as a whole. It's in a good position. But the second part of the meditation, still with your own body, please find out the most irritating or painful part of your body, the one which is causing your problem. And zoom in on that feeling, just like you zoom in on Google Earth or Google Maps, whatever, which one you want. So you fill your mindfulness with that irritating or painful feeling. I'm now focusing on the bridge of my nose where there's still an itch from hay fever. You may have a tummy ache, focusing on the tummy. But whatever ache or pain you have, fill your awareness with it. Zoom in. Once you are aware of that physical discomfort, see if you can investigate what makes it worse, what makes it better. Usually you'll find that fear of what might happen in the future, trying to control it, get rid of it, that just makes that part of the body more tense and the irritation or pain worse. Whereas letting be, opening the door of your heart to that feeling, being kind to it and allowing it to be rather than trying to get rid of it, going towards it rather than trying to run away from it. Those are the sorts of things which make the pain or irritation less. Experiment and find out. You're learning how to relax your own body, little part of it, part by part. Imagine expanding it rather than squashing it. That makes it ease off a bit. Again, using this simile of the rubber band, sometimes it's like something stretching on both ends, pulling it tight. See if you can imagine that band in the body, and you let go of both ends. Let it go. And your mindfulness gives you the feedback. The ache and the pain is getting less and less and less. irritation or pain diminishes considerably. With practice, could even totally disappear. Once you relax one part of the body, see if you can go to another part, maybe your knees or your bottom or whatever, and do the same to that. Zoom in on the irritation or pain. Be one with that irritation or pain, let it be, and learn how to relax it away. Continue to do this, you find you can relax your body better than going to an expensive spa. Everything in the body is loose and light. Nothing being stretched, nothing tight. And it feels pleasant. Have a body which is relaxed, free of tension. You've got many aches and pains, maybe got 2, 3, 4 parts of the body. But now I'm going to move on to the mind. Now I want you to give a number from 1 to 10 of how peaceful you are or how agitated. Again, really agitated, worried, concerned, stressed, that's an 8 or a 9. But if you really are at peace, relaxed, feel a sense of freedom, then it's a 3 or a 2. And once you've given it a number, that's a trick to be mindful of how peaceful or how agitated you are. What do you need to do to relax and bring that number down smaller and smaller, from a 5 to a 4, from a 4 to a 3? And what makes you more agitated? Again, you'll find fear of the future, thinking what would happen if, followed by something negative and terrible. Instead, change the thoughts to what would happen if something positive, something good, which is equally likely. And for the past, cannot be changed now, let it go. No one's to blame, just people being people. So be kind to the past, be compassionate to the future. Open the door of your heart to both. And you find the mind moves to more and more peace. The number goes down and down and down. Just watching how peaceful you are or how agitated. Just by relaxing the body, this is learning how to relax your mind, where all those emotions occur. When what's underneath those emotions is calmed down, you'll find the thoughts get less and less. Making the mind really peaceful. Many people, if they're at home, will fall asleep now. Wonderful, you deserve it. Your brain is tight. But here, once you get calm, I'm going to suggest, if you want to start to become aware of your breathing by asking yourself, am I breathing in or am I breathing out? And then, second question, how do you know?
what is a feeling in you which tells you the breath is going in, or which tells you the breath is going out? How exactly do you know? You do not need to locate that feeling in the body, it's in my nose or my mouth or chest or anything, just so you're aware of the breath coming in and going out. This is a gentle, reassuring rhythm which you remember from the time you were a baby in your mum's womb, or when you're first born on your mother's chest. The gentle, reassuring rhythm of the breathing. So you put that in the center of your field of attention. So you know the breath. Everything else is on the edge, not the center. And as you breathe in, it helps to say to yourself, breathing in peace. As you breathe out, let go. Breathing in peace, breathe out, let go. And as you say peace to yourself, what does it mean, the word peace? What actually is it? But don't just say the word, feel it, visualize it. Make it something real, not just a word. So with every breath, you're actually breathing in the real thing called peace. And whatever you want to let go of, any sickness, tumors, fear, anxiety, breathe that out with every out-breath, imagining it in any which way you wish. Imagine that going out with every out-breath. So when you breathe in peace, it is real peace you're drawing into your body and mind. When you're breathing out, let go. Things you'd rather not have, let them go now with every out-breath. Visualize, imagine, and it works. Breathing in peace. Breathe out, let go. Breathe in peace. Breathe out, let go. And if you start thinking too much, a little bit of thought is not that bad. Start thinking too much, then go back to your peace indicator from 1 to 10. And again, put some attention in relaxing the mind a bit more. And then go back to the breath afterwards. So I'm going to be quiet for about 5 or 8 minutes to let you experiment. So how are you feeling now towards the end of another meditation? How peaceful are you? How calm, how relaxed? And ask the question, why? What did you do, or rather, what didn't you do that made the mind like it is now? The last minute or two of meditation is where we can learn what works. So later on we can repeat that. Now going to ring the gong three times. Please listen to where we sound from the gong and let the third ding of the gong take you out from your meditation. So before we go any further, how was that? Was that easy to understand? Any problems which you had with it? If you fell asleep, please, that is quite normal because so many people are tired and you just need a bit more rest. But after a while you get beyond the sleepiness and you can really relax and enjoy being relaxed. And you get really good understanding of your body and how to relax your mind no matter what's happening. Okie dokie, are there any questions in the box?
None,
no. Okay, so we can go back early tonight. No, I did bring something here which I can read out for you. So this is, but I need a bit more light. Is it coming up?
Are there any questions from the audience? Because we've forgotten to tell them about the box.
Oh, yes, okay. Because a lot of times that when people have questions, they are embarrassed of putting their hands up and asking their questions. But in order to encourage questions, I tell a story. And this is actually from the old Buddhist scriptures. I haven't told this one for a while. This is from 2,500 years ago. It doesn't do real Buddhism, but it just it encourages questions. Because there was a gentleman who came to see the Buddha. I was asking him about, like, karma. He said, why is it that some people are really wealthy and other people are just so poor? Even though you have to work so hard that you still find it hard to pay the bills. And other people, they hardly work at all. And they just do it so easily. There must be some karma there from your past. And so the Buddha actually gave a really good answer. What karma you have to do now so you're not poor in your next life? It's such a good answer that he asked the second question. Why is it that some people are beautiful while other people are ugly? And you may have noticed when I mentioned the word ugly, I put my gaze at the floor. Because when I said this to someone in Singapore some years ago, I just happened, by chance, to be looking at them when I said the word ugly. And they complained so much. Why did you mention the word ugly when you were looking at me? So now I always look at the floor. I tell the young monks, even when you say the story and say beautiful, always look at the floor as well. Otherwise people might get the wrong idea.
So, but he gave a good answer. What you have to do in this life to be beautiful in your next life. With such a good answer, then came the important question, which is why I tell this story. Why are some people intelligent and other people, basically, let's say as it is, stupid? They really have a hard time at school, they do extra homework, and still it's very hard to pass their exams. And the Buddha said it's because of karma from your past. You're stupid in this life. And he said, the reason why you're going to be stupid in your next life, and this is actually what the Buddha said 2,500 years ago, the karmic cause of stupidity in your next life is not asking questions in this life. Any questions? That's what he said.
Yes.
So you've got a chance. Don't blame me for stupid your next life. You had a chance. Yeah, go on. I always get a question after that. Yeah, go on.
To know what age you do retire.
Do age? I only retire in my box. That's the only place I'm going to retire. So, as a monk, there's an old saying that as a monk, that for a holy man, life begins at 70. Before then, you're just too young to be a holy man. So you've got to be at least 70 to be like a holy man. And the older you get, the more reverence you get. Like, I mean, if someone's about 30 or 40, you know, well, who would actually listen to guys like that or girls like that? So the older you are, they always think the wiser you are. That's one of the reasons why I don't lie. I can't lie. That's what gets my rules. Some people ask me how old I am. Do you know how old I am? I'll tell you, I'm 784. I'm not lying. And that's really like a holy man. 784. Would you believe that?
Months.
So I say months,
yes.
Which is far more impressive. So, say how old you are, 784. So, you can actually do that. I told that to a couple of kids, and they said, well, that's really cool. Because they're about 15. I said, well, how much is that 15 times 12? That's 180. Oh, I can drive a car now. I can go to the pub. So, well, yeah, if you can get away with that, good luck to you. But anyway, so that's actually, we don't retire. And you don't need to retire. Because obviously you'll just do less the older you are. But it's amazing to see the amount of health that you have when you meditate. Yeah, just my age, there's nothing wrong with me. And I can still just travel around the world and just a tiny bit of jet lag, but hardly any. I really work my butt off when I go places. Now somebody asked me, it was in Singapore a long time ago, about 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, giving a big talk to a couple of thousand people. And then when it came to question time, this young man came to the microphone and said, yeah, I've been listening to all you say. That's all very well. You're a monk. You don't need to do anything. You don't have to get up to work. Well, I have to get up to work every day and go through the traffic and go to the office and do all this stressful work. What would you know about real life? That's what they said to me. And so, you know, I'm not going to stand for that. So, you know, you try and wind me up, I'll wind you back. Just like I say this... last year when I went to Malaysia, about this time, this Christian friend of mine tried to wind me up. You know, I like sort of mingling with all sorts of people. This Christian friend looked at me and said, you know, Ajahn Brahm, you know, nothing is greater than God. I said, yes, I agree with you. Nothing, the great void, emptiness, nirvana, the great nothing is much greater than God. And he said, that is not what I meant. You wind me up, I'll wind you back. So when it comes to, what was I talking about, old age?
The young time.
What?
The young guy.
Yeah, that young guy in Singapore, thank you. When I was that young guy in Singapore, I said, exactly what I've been doing that day, getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, that's my usual time I get up. Do you get up that time?
No, thank
some of you do. Good on you. You're a monk to be. Other people, no, the bed is too attractive.
Absolutely.
So anyway, I'll get 4 o'clock in the morning, start doing work then. I did everything I did all day just without any break. Even my lunch. I can't have a sort of free lunch. People come up and watch me and ask me for blessings and talk to me and ask questions afterwards and counselling afterwards. It's all day. When I actually listed everything I did that day, he came up to the microphone again. He said, "Wow, I never realised monks had to work so hard." He said, "I always thought that one day I wanted to become a monk, not now." I lost the convert. But never mind, it was good fun. So yeah, but there was a lovely study somebody showed me. This was, it's a, something on the internet called TED Channel.
TED Talks.
TED Talks, yeah, really interesting stuff. And there was a lady there, was, she wondered, why is it some people in stressful jobs are really healthy and other ones have cardiac problems? So, you know, she decided to investigate why. Took a lot of people with very stressful jobs, you know, found out their cardiac health and looked at them. Why some people get stressed, well, get cardiac problems and other people didn't. And it was totally to do with your attitude. For people that, "I don't want to do this, why me? It's really unfair. Why can't other people help? Why is it always me who has to do all this stuff?" They're the people who get heart attacks. The ones who said, "Oh, it's wonderful. More opportunity to make good karma. More opportunity to do good stuff. This is a challenge for me. I can do this. Let's give it a try. Who knows what might happen?" Those sorts of people never get cardiac problems. It's not the stress. It's how you deal with the stress. And the negativity people build around their situations in life. Why me? You know the answer to why me. Why not? Someone said, the classic case was a lady, 96 years of age, healthy all her life, went to, you know, the doctors to get a check-up and found she had cancer. You know what she said?
Why me?
Why me? At 96, you're lucky. I was going to say something rude there. You got away with it for 96 years and now you say, why me? Crikey. But you know it's actually why. It's your attitude towards life. That changes a lot with your cardiac health and all the other health which you have. Whenever you get negative, "Oh, I don't want to do this. Oh, I should be retired now. Why do I have to travel around the world in business class?" I get looked after. All these people, they look after me. Why me? Why not? Yeah, I don't do that. Yeah, thank you very much. But it's not a free lunch. I have to really work like my butt off when I... Actually, I'm really surprised that I'm not more thin. Because I won't work my butt off. It should be much thinner than it is now. If I didn't work so hard, it'd be even fatter. Sorry?
Doesn't help you eat donuts.
You eat donuts? Well, no. It's just called donuts. I don't eat donuts. When I was over in the UK, I ate bangers and mash.
Yeah.
Good, really good bags of mush,
yeah.
Yummy stuff. And to tell you this, is one fellow who used to live in Rolling Stone. Great story. He, getting old, he was a smoker, so he got lung cancer, and he was moved over to, he's one of the first patients over in the hospice in Murdoch Hospice. And so, actually, there, because he was one of the first time I met one of the sponsors of that. That was Dome, you know, Dome Coffee, or the Dome Restaurants. And I found out why they call it Dome. Because, you know, the manager, the guy who started this, a tall guy with a bald head. Dome. I think that's it. I know now why you want to do this. So I met him, he was one of the sponsors of the hospice. And anyway, this guy, Ted, you know, from the north of England, he was put in there, you know, he's dying of cancer. The only thing, palliative care, they gave up on him. No chance, few days left. So they bunged him in the hospice there. And he told me that I went to see him just the first, the next day. And the nurse sort of said, "What do you want for dinner?" He said, "Well, look, you know, I've got diabetes, so I can't have anything sweet. I've got high cholesterol, so I can't have anything oily. I've got hardened arteries, I can't have anything salty." And the nurse looked at him and said, "What the hell are you talking about? The diabetes isn't going to kill you. The cholesterol won't kill you. The cancer's going to kill you. You can eat whatever you want." And his eyes went wide. "Really? Really? Yeah, what do you want? Anything you like." So you get the greasiest, sugary, saltiest food he possibly could imagine. The sort of stuff his wife had forbidden him from eating for the last 4 or 5 years. And?
He didn't die.
He didn't die. He walked out of the hospice about a few days later. He had an extra 6 months. I saw that happening. He was having such a good time. Eating his favourite food at last.
Yeah.
He actually got better. You know, the cancer was still there, but it went in a little bit of remission. He had an extra 6 months of life. That's pretty good. So, says a lot for health food, isn't it? It's okay if you enjoy it, for goodness sake. But even Shakespeare said, man doesn't, the same as women, doesn't live by bread alone. It's also your mental attitude as well. Get a good mental attitude, and it's amazing just how that increases your mental health and also your physical health as well. So that's actually why this meditation stuff really works. So there's a great little example there of, you know, when the person was really sick, they were dying, just eat nice food and you survive. So it's just like one of the stories I told at a funeral service. And I told this at cancer groups as well. They hate me for telling this story. Because it's all about health food and stuff. So, I first told this at a funeral service. And at funerals. It's bad enough losing someone you love. You go to the funeral service and it's even more depressing. You go out more suicidal than you went in. So, I decided when I do funeral services to make them more uplifting, telling jokes. I tell jokes at funeral services. And I still remember the first time I told a joke here at the funeral service. You know the funeral directors in the back?
Yeah.
All in black, you know, look really miserable. And they were going, no, you're not supposed to tell a joke at a funeral service. But I wasn't having any of that. I decided to tell my joke. And the joke, it was about this elderly couple. Now, they're both in their 80s, and they've been married for so many years that when one of them died, the other one died about 3 days later. I've seen that many, many times. They're so close together that when one of them dies, just the other one, I don't know, maybe lose their meaning in life, and they died as well. So they appeared in heaven together. They were met by this angel in heaven, and the angel took them to this huge mansion. Now, on the cliffs was million-dollar views. And the angel said, now, because if you've lived a good life, this is your eternal reward, this mansion here on the cliffs. And the guy took one look at that and said, look, that is such an expensive residence. Someone like me will not be able to afford the council rates. And the angel says, sir, we don't have councils and governments and politicians up in heaven. You know where they go. It's all for free. Well, that's all right. So they took him inside their mansion, you know, their world eternal reward. And you wouldn't believe all the furnishings in this mansion. You know, there was mahogany tables. There were chandeliers with crystal from Waterford in Ireland. Even the toilet, the bowl was made out of gold, solid gold. And the little thing you press was a diamond. And when you press that diamond, water never came out. Chanel number 5 came out. When he goes through the mansion, he said, well, this is really expensive stuff. Look, someone on my salary would not be able to afford the insurance premiums on all this. And the angel said again, what are you talking about? We don't have burglars up in heaven. We don't need insurance. This is all for free. And then he took him into the garage. Not a double garage, triple garage. And the first car was there was this huge stretch limo. You never seen anything so big. It was so big they had a swimming pool inside. And his second car was one of these all utility vehicles. Now, the vehicles they have over here, the four-wheel drives, yeah, they can go in the bush, they can go through mud. This one, he said, it can go up a waterfall. It was so powerful. So I'm making it up, okay? It's fabulous here. A waterfall.
Yes.
And the third car. was a limited edition red Ferrari. And the angel said, look, as a man, I saw you looking at all these car manuals. I know you always wanted a sports car, a really powerful sports car, but number one, you couldn't afford it. So we decided your eternal reward, you're just a good guy. This is your turn. You've got your own red Ferrari sports car. A limited edition, red, with sunroof. And he said, yes, that's very good. What's the point of having a fast car these days when there's so many police with their speed cameras everywhere? He said, sir, there's no police up in heaven either. And anyway, you can go as fast as you like. It doesn't matter. If you have a crash, you're already dead. What does it matter? You can go as fast as you like. And then he opened the garage doors, and on the opposite side of the road from the mansion was this beautiful, immaculate 18-hole golf course. And the angel said, I know you love playing golf, and you know, when you got a bit old and sick, you couldn't play anymore, so we decided, for your eternal reward, to build you a golf course on the opposite side of the road. And he said, I'll let you into a secret. That golf course, he said, was designed by Tiger Woods himself. You know, when he was having his problem with his wife and he crashed his car and hit the tree, he had a near-death experience. And when he had a near-death experience, we caught him, made him design the golf course before we took him back to Earth again. So this is Tiger Woods golf course. And he said, in heaven, the greens are just so arranged, whichever way you hit the ball, once it gets on the green, it always goes in the hole. Otherwise, what's the point of being heaven? I didn't mention, actually, in the house, in the mansion, they had this huge TV. Really incredible size TV. He said, on this TV, you can watch whatever you like, whatever movie, whatever sport, but if you watch sport, if you watch the cricket, the Australians always win. Apparently they lost the other day.
Yes.
That's a lot of suffering. It's supposed to be heaven, so your team always wins. If you follow Fremantle, the Dockers always win. Just the very last, make it exciting. If you follow the Eagles always win. So it's heaven, whichever one you want. So, as soon as he saw his golf course, I said also, he said, I can't afford the fees. Because he had to pay fees to go on the golf course. He said, there's no fees. And he said, am I a life member? He said, no, you're not a life member. You're a death member. You're dead. So then the angel disappeared. And as soon as the angel disappeared, this man got really angry at his wife. He was really scolding her and shouting her and calling really bad names. And when he sort of calmed down for a few minutes, the wife said, why are you getting so angry at me for? You've got this beautiful mansion. You've got your beautiful TV show. Team is always going to win. You've got your red Ferrari sports car. You can go for your life. I'm sorry, go for your death. And you've got your golf course on the opposite side of the road. Why are you so angry for? He said, because, wife, if it wasn't for all that health food you gave me, I could have been up here years ago. Oh, and some people into dieting, they really get angry at me for that. But it's true, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. But anyway, I was going to read this out before I open up, because this came to the monastery the other day. People always give you nice little snippets of information. This is from some newspaper. And the title is Prison Life Beats the Trouble and Strife. You know what trouble and strife is? That's Cockney rhyming slang. For wife, yeah, okay. So Kansas man, Larry Ripple, walked up to a bank cashier and handed over a note that read, I have a gun. Give me your cash. And the cashier handed him nearly $3,000. Larry took the money and wandered slowly over to the lobby of the bank, where, with great satisfaction, he sat himself down. A security guard wandered over, and Larry said, yes, I'm the guy you're looking for. And within a few moments, he was in custody. Exactly as he had told his wife only an hour or so before, I'd rather be in jail than with you at home. But there is a horrible twist to the story. The judge, without mercy, sent him home. That was his punishment.
Without mercy.
without mercy at all. That rotten judge. You can never trust a judge. He robbed a bank and he sentenced him to go back home. He wasn't happy. Life is like that. So I thought I'd share that with you to give you some happiness and laughter about real life. No mercy at all. Anyway, so I think no mercy to his wife as well, putting up with a guy like that. It always goes two ways. So anyway, that was one question. Another question, anyone else want to be intelligent in your next life? Yes. Karma, yes. Karma is what you do always comes back to you. So it's one of my sayings, it's actually in a lot of the books, is you don't, if someone's really hurt you and been mean to you, there's no need to seek revenge or get angry at them or try and sort them out, because karma will get the bastard anyway.
Too late.
Sorry?
Too late.
Wait, what?
Karma is too late.
Karma too late? You've already got somewhere. Okay.
You want revenge now.
Oh, no, it will come. Be patient. Just wait. The check's in the mail. It'll come to the... So that's what it means, is like trying to seek revenge just makes you upset. And why should you suffer for what they did? You didn't do anything wrong. It's their fault. They did the bad stuff. Why do you allow yourself to suffer? So let karma do the business for you and just enjoy yourself. That'll set it out. So, another understanding of karma is was taught to me by one of the prisoners incarnate many, many years ago. I used to go and teach meditation there. And this prisoner said, can I just have 5 minutes with you afterwards? Yeah, sure. And he said, look, I've been put in jail for a robbery which I did not do. Now, he said, I know that many of the prisoners would say they didn't do the crime, but honestly, no, I respect you, Ajahn Brahm, I would not lie to you. I've been put in jail for something I didn't do. And no, he was really convincing, and I thought, wow, this poor fellow has been incarcerated unfairly. It's a miscarriage of justice. And so, I know that once you're in jail, you know, there's not much you can do. You're only allowed one phone call a week or something. So, but I knew a lot of people, I got my contacts, and I thought, I'm going to take up this case. I'm going to do something. And I was thinking of all the people I was going to call as soon as I got back to the monastery. And then he interrupted me and said, but, the great but word, but, Ajahn Brahm, there were so many other robberies where I was not caught, I guess it is fair. Oh, that's karma. When you sort of get pinged by the police for speeding, and you think, that's unfair. How many times when you're speeding and you don't get caught, you think, oh, it's so unfair, I was speeding this morning and there was no policeman around. So it all actually balances out in the long term. So you don't have to worry, oh, it's really unfair, why does it happen to me? How many times have you got away with it? And when you look at that, it's like, oh, okay, fair. So that's one idea of the karma, but the most important part of karma is there's two parts of karma. Now, karma gives you the ingredients of what you have to deal with in life. But the most important part of karma is what you're doing with it now. That's the karma of the present. And there's always something you can do with what you've got. And the story I usually gave, this is in my first book, two people baking a cake. And the first person baking a cake has the most amazing ingredients. They've got organically grown whole wheat flour made in a field where there's no genetically modified crops for 1,000 miles. They have canola oil, which is supposed to be cholesterol free. They have honey from Western Australia, diabetic free honey. And they have beautiful fruits grown in their backyard. And they've got the most modern kitchen to cook it in. They've got the very best ingredients. Second person has got the worst ingredients. They've got old white flour, which has been mouldy, so they have to take the green bits out and use the other bits. They've got diabetically enhanced butter. No, that's diabetically enhanced sugar, cholesterol enhanced butter. And they've got fruit, which is so hard you could use it in bullets. And They got this old pre-war kitchen, pre-First World War, that is, not Second World War, to cook it in. They got the very worst ingredients. Who bakes the best cake?
The bad one.
No, it doesn't matter. It's not always the person with the worst ingredients. Because some people, they put so much love and care into putting that cake together. Even with the worst ingredients, they make the most delicious cake. And some people got the very best ingredients. And they just waste it. They just don't care, and their cake comes out terrible. So that is a simile of life. Some people are just born with silver gold spoons in their mouth, and they just waste their whole life. Incredibly talented, beautiful, smart, parents are wealthy, like the Paris Hiltons, I usually say. Waste their whole life on drugs, messing around. They've got incredible ingredients, they don't know how to use them. And other people, they're really born, sort of, you know, not the most smart, not the most beautiful, but they put so much care and love into what they're doing. They become incredible people. So it's the karma you do with what you've got. That is what makes a person a beautiful person. So just because a person is not sort of gifted with all this stuff, that's not the point. What you're doing with what you've got, that is the point of karma. So it makes everybody's got a chance. And again, it's those people who are not so gifted, who rise to the occasion. They're the people, wow. Yeah, Nelson Mandela's 26 years in jail. What do you do with that? Incredible person. So many people like that, and you have your heroes. You probably know people who have just been through the mill, and now maybe even physically disabled, not really the best brains, but so kind, so beautiful. They're the people who've made the best of what they've had. So karma is not limiting. Karma gives you from the past, gives you the ingredients which you have to work with. But the most important thing in life is what you do with those ingredients. That's karma in a nutshell. Mm-hmm. Very good. And time is up. Folks, yes.
Another wonderful day.
Nice joke. Okay. This is a joke to finish with, because once you've heard this, you want to get rid of me. This was told to me in London by an 8-year-old. Why did the banana go to the doctor? Why did the banana go to the doctor? Because it wasn't peeling well. Okay, now you can go, and you want to go. No more of that. Thank you. Yeah, your fault. Her karma.
Yeah, we'll get you.
No, you get me. I'm going to tell them at home, though. All right, and thank you so much, Ajahn Brown. It's absolutely wonderful to have you back.